The Great Plays series of the National Broadcasting Company presents The Rivals by Richard Brinsley Sheridan. The Rivals is one of the best comedies of 18th century England, as evidenced by the fact that it still is very much alive today, and still a favorite wherever it is played. The play, when first produced, made the reputation of its 23-year-old author, Richard Brinsley Sheridan, later famous as a theatrical producer and statesman. Also, it gave to the world that never-to-be-forgotten character, Mrs. Malaprop, in whose honor any misuse of big words or phrases has since been termed a Malapropism.
This is the English seaside city of Bath, the gayest town in all England, in an era remembered for its gaiety. Our hero, of course, is that brave young soldier, Captain Jack Absolute, son of Sir Anthony Absolute. Disguised as a poor young ensign named Beverly, Captain Absolute has won the heart of the charming and rich young Lydia Languish, who is determined to be loved romantically for herself alone, and not for her dowry. But Lydia is the ward of Mrs. Malaprop, who is determined that the girl shall marry a wealthy suitor of her own choosing. Thus it becomes very complicated and embarrassing when Captain Absolute learns that his father and Mrs. Malaprop have decided that he shall marry the girl of his own choice, but whom he has won under an assumed name. However, let us listen. At this moment, on a street in Bath, Captain Absolute's manservant, Fag, encounters a friend.
What? Thomas? Sure it is he. What? Thomas? Thomas!
Hey, odd's life, Mr. Fagg. Give us your hand, my old fellow servant.
Excuse my glove, Thomas. Glad to see you. But who the deuce thought of seeing you here in Bath?
But Master thought another fit of the gout was coming to make him a visit. So he'd a mind to gee at the slip, and whip, we were all off at an hour's warning.
Aye, hasty in everything, or it would not be Sir Anthony Absolute.
But tell us, Mr. Fagg, how does young master, odd Sir Anthony, will stare to see the captain here?
I do not serve Captain Absolute now.
Why, sure?
At present, I am employed by Ensign Beverly.
I doubt, Mr. Fagg, that you han't changed for the better.
I have not changed, Thomas.
No? Why, didn't you say you had left young Captain Absolute?
No. Well, honest Thomas, I must puzzle you no farther. Briefly, then, Captain Absolute and Ensign Beverly are one and the same person.
So. Do tell us, Mr. Fagg, the meaning of it. You know I had trusted you.
You'll be secret, Thomas?
As a coach horse?
Why, then, the cause of all this is love. Love, Thomas. My master is in love with a lady of a very singular taste. A lady who likes him better as a half-pay ensign than if she knew he was son and heir to Sir Anthony Absolute, a baron of 50,000 a year.
That is an odd taste indeed. But has she got the stuff, Mr. Fagg? Is she rich, eh?
Rich? Zounds, Thomas. She could pay the national debt as easily as I could pay my washerwoman.
May one hear her name?
Miss Lydia Languish. But there's an old tough aunt in the way, a Mrs. Malaprop. Though, by the way, she has never seen my master.
Well, I wish they were once harnessed together.
Knowing Captain Absolute as I do, your pardon, Ensign Beverly. Well, my lady, Mrs. Malaprop, will do well to see that all the locks and bars are working. See you tonight, Thomas.
Now let us look in at Mrs. Malaprop's home in Bath. The beautiful and romantic Lydia Languish is sitting on a sofa when her maid, Lucy, announces a visitor.
Lud, ma'am, here is Miss Melville.
Is it possible? My dearest Julia, how delighted I am. How unexpected is this happiness?
True, Lydia, and our pleasure is the greater.
Oh, Julia, I have a thousand things to tell you. But first inform me what brings you to Bath. Is Sir Anthony here?
He is. We are arrived within this hour, and I suppose he will be here to wait on Mrs. Malaprop as soon as he is dressed.
Then before we are interrupted, let me impart to you some of my distress. My letters have informed you of my whole connection with Beverly, but I have lost him, Julia. My aunt has discovered our meetings by a note she intercepted and has confined me ever since. Yet, would you believe it? She has absolutely fallen in love with a tall Irish baronet she met one night since she's been here at Lady McShuffle's Road.
You jest, Lydia.
No, upon my word. She really carries on a kind of correspondence with him, under a feigned name, though, till she chooses to be known to him. But it is Adelia or Acelia, I assure you.
Well, then surely she is now more indulgent to her niece.
Quite the contrary. Since she has discovered her own frailty, she's become more suspicious of mine. Then I must inform you of another plague. That odious Akers is to be in Bath today. So that I protest I shall be teased out of all spirits.
Oh, come, come, Lydia. Hope for the best. Sir Anthony shall use his interest with Mrs. Malaprop.
But you have not heard the worst. Unfortunately, I had quarreled with my poor Beverly just before my aunt made the discovery, and I have not seen him since to make it up.
And you let him depart so, and have not seen him since?
Well, 'twas the next day my aunt found the matter out, and now I've lost him forever.
Oh, if he is as deserving and sincere as you have represented him to me, he will never give you up so. Yet, consider, Lydia, you tell me he is but an ensign, and you have 30,000 pounds.
But you know I lose most of my fortune if I marry without my aunt's consent, till of age. And that is what I have determined to do, ever since I knew the penalty. Nor could I love the man who would wish to wait a day for the alternative.
Nay, this is caprice.
Oh, ma'am, here is Sir Anthony Absolute. Just come with your aunt.
Oh, then I must go. Sir Anthony does not know I am here. And if we meet, he'll detain me to show me the town. I'll take another opportunity of paying my respects to Mrs. Malaprop when she shall treat me as long as she chooses with her select words, so ingeniously misapplied, without being mispronounced.
Oh, Lud, ma'am, they're both coming upstairs.
Well, I'll not detain you, cuz. Adieu, my dear Julia. There, through my room, you'll find another staircase.
Adieu.
Here, Lucy, hide these books. Quick, quick, fling Peregrine Pickle under the toilet. Throw Roger Branham into the closet. Put the innocent adultery into the whole duty of man. Thrust Lord Aimworth under the sofa. There now. Leave Fordyce's sermons open on the table.
There, Sir Anthony. There sits the deliberate simpleton who wants to disgrace her family and lavish herself on a fellow not worth a shilling.
Madam, I thought you once...
You thought, miss, I don't know any business you have to think at all. Thought does not become a young woman. But the point we would request of you is that you would promise to forget this fellow, to illiterate him, I say, quite from your memory.
Oh, madam, our memories are independent of our wills. It is not so easy to forget.
And I say it is, miss. There is nothing on earth so easy as to forget if a person chooses to set about it. I'm sure I have as much forgot your poor dear uncle as if he had never existed. And I thought it my duty so to do. And let me tell you, Lydia, these violent memories do not become a young woman.
Why, sure, she won't pretend to remember what she's ordered not. This comes of her reading.
What crime, madam, have I committed to be treated thus?
Now, don't attempt to extricate yourself from the matter. You know I have proof controvertible of it. But tell me, will you promise to do as you're bid? Will you take a husband of your friend's choosing?
Madam, I must tell you plainly that had I no preference for anyone else, the choice you have made would be my aversion.
And what business have you, miss, with preference and aversion? They do not become a young woman. And you ought to know that as both always wear off, it is far safer in matrimony to begin with a little contumacious aversion. I am sure I hated your poor dear uncle before marriage, and yet, miss, you are sensible what a wife I made. And when it pleased heaven to release me from him, 'tis unknown the tears I shed. But suppose we were going to give you another choice. Will you promise to give up this Beverly?
Could I belie my thoughts so far as to give that promise? My actions would certainly as far belie my words.
Oh, take yourself to your room.
Willingly, ma'am.
Here's a little intricate hussy for you.
Oh, it's not to be wondered at, ma'am. All this is the natural consequence of teaching girls to read.
Mm.
Oh, on my way hither, Mrs. Malaprop, I observed your niece's maid coming forth from a circulating library.
Vile places, indeed.
Madam, a circulating library in a town is as an evergreen tree of diabolical knowledge. It blossoms through the year. And depend on it, Mrs. Malaprop, that they who are so fond of handling the leaves will long for the fruit at last.
Sir Anthony, surely you speak laconically.
Oh, Mrs. Malaprop, in moderation now, what would you have a woman know?
Well, observe me, Sir Anthony. I would by no means wish a daughter of mine to be a progeny of learning. I would send her at 9 years old to a young woman's cemetery in order to learn a little ingenuity and artifice. Then, sir, she should have a supercilious knowledge and accounts, and, as she grew up, I would have her instructed in geometry, that she might know something of the contagious countries. And above all, she should be mistress of orthodoxy, that she might not misspell and mispronounce words so shamefully as girls usually do, and likewise that she might reprehend the true meaning of what she is saying. This, Sir Anthony, is what I would have a woman know, and I do not think there is a superstitious article in it.
Well, well, Mrs. Malaprop, I must confess that you are a truly moderate and polite arguer. But to the more important point. Now, you say you have no objection to my proposal.
None, I assure you. I am under no positive engagement with Mr. Akers, and as Lydia is so obstinate against him, perhaps your son may have better success.
Well, madam, I'll write to the boy directly. He is at present with his regiment.
We have never seen your son, Sir Anthony. But I hope for no spurious objections on his side.
Objection? Let him object if he dare. Oh, no, Mrs. Malaprop. Jack knows that the least demur puts me in a frenzy. In his younger days, it was Jack do this, and if he demurred, I'd knock him down.
Hmm.
And if he grumbled, I always sent him out of the room.
The properest way on the conscience. Nothing is so conciliating to young people as severity. Well, Sir Anthony, I shall dismiss Mr. Akers' suit for Lydia's hand and prepare her to receive your son's invocations. I hope you will represent her to Captain Absolute as an object not altogether illegible.
Take my advice, Mrs. Malaprop. If she rejects his proposal, clap her under lock and key. And if you were to let the servants forget to bring her dinner for 3 or 4 days, you can't conceive how she'd come about.
Now visit the lodgings of Sir Anthony's son, Captain Absolute, posing as Ensign Beverly in his effort to win Lydia. With Captain Absolute is his friend Falkland, when Bob Akers is announced. Akers also is in love with Lydia, but he does not know that his rival in romance, Ensign Beverly, is in reality Captain Absolute.
Sir, Mr. Akers is below.
Bag, show the gentleman up. Stay, Falkland. Miss Akers lives within a mile of Sir Anthony, and he shall tell you how your dear Julia has been ever since you left her.
What, is he much acquainted in the family?
Oh, very intimate. Bob Akers is likewise a rival of mine, that is, of my other selves. For he does not think his friend, Captain Absolute, ever saw Mistress Lydia languish. And it's ridiculous enough to hear him complain to me of one Beverly, a conceited, skulking rival.
Oh, I know where to find him.
He's here.
Ah, oh, my dear friend, noble captain and honest Jack, how dost thou? Just arrived, faith, as you see, sir, your humble servant. Warm work on the roads, Jack. Odds, whips, and wheels, I've travelled like a comet, with a tail of dust all the way as long as the Mars.
Ah, Bob, you are indeed an eccentric planet. But we know your attraction hither. Give me leave to introduce Mr. Falkland to you. Mr. Falkland, Mr. Akers.
Sir, I am most heartily glad to see you. What? This is Mr. Falkland, who...
Aye, Bob. Miss Julia's Mr. Falkland.
Ah, Mr. Falkland, you are indeed a happy man.
I have not seen Miss Melville yet, sir. I hope she is well.
Never knew her better in my life, sir. Never better. So lively and entertaining. So full of wit and humor.
Yes, I must leave you. Captain, I own I am somewhat flurried, and that confounded booby has perceived it.
Nay, but stay, Falkland, and thank Mr. Akers for his news.
Hang his news!
Oh, my poor Falkland.
Oh, the gentleman wasn't angry at my praising his mistress, was he?
A little jealous, I believe, Bob.
You don't say so. Jealous of me? Oh, that's a good joke.
Oh, there's nothing strange in that, Bob. Let me tell you, that sprightly grace and insinuating manner of yours will do some mischief among the girls here.
Oh, you joke. Mrs. But you know I'm not my own property. My dear Lydia Languish has forestalled me. She never could abide me in the country because I used to dress so badly. But odds, frogs, and tambours, I'll make my clothes know who's master. My hair has been in training some time. See these curl papers?
Indeed.
Aye, and though the side curls are a little restive, the high part takes it very kindly.
Oh, you'll polish, I doubt not.
Absolutely, I propose so. Then, if I can find out this Ensign Beverly, odd triggers and flints, I'll make him know the difference on it.
Spoke like a man.
Sir, there's a gentleman below desires to see you. Shall I show him into the parlor?
Aye, you may.
Well, I must be gone.
Oh, stay, stay. Who is it, Fag?
Your father, sir.
Well, you puppy, why didn't you show him up directly?
Now, you have yes, business sir. With Sir Anthony. I expect a message from Mrs. Malaprop at my lodgings. I've sent also to my dear friend, Sir Lucius O'Trigger. Adieu, Jack. We must meet at night when you shall give me a dozen bumpers to little Lydia.
That I will, with all my heart.
Now for a parental lecture. I hope he's heard nothing of the business that has brought me here. I wish the gout had held him fast in Devonshire.
Jack, my dear boy.
Sir, I am delighted to see you here and looking so well. Oh, your sudden arrival in Bath made me apprehensive for your health.
Yes, very apprehensive, I dare say. Well, Jack, you were recruiting here, hmm?
Yes, sir, I am on duty.
Jack, I am glad to see you. Yes, indeed. Jack, I have been considering that I grow old and infirm, and I shall probably not trouble you long.
Oh, pardon me, sir. I never saw you look more strong and hearty. And I pray fervently that you may continue, sir.
Oh, I hope your prayers may be heard with all my heart. Well, then, Jack, I've been considering that I am so strong and hearty, I may continue to plague you for a long time. Now, I'm sensible that the income of your commission and what I have hitherto allowed you is but a small pittance for a lad of your spirit.
Sir, you are very good, really.
And it is my wish, while yet I live, to have my boy make some figure in the world, and I have resolved, therefore, to fix you at once in a noble independence.
Sir, your kindness overpowers me. Yet, sir, I presume you would not wish me to quit the army.
Oh, that shall be as your wife chooses.
My wife, sir?
Yes, settle that between you. Yes, settle all that between you.
Sir, did you say a wife?
Yes, wife. Didn't I mention her before?
Not a word of her, sir.
Not sure. Oh, memory slips with age. Yes, Jack, the independence I was talking of is by a marriage. The fortune is saddled with a wife, but I suppose that makes no difference.
Sir, sir, you amaze me.
Hey, what the devil's the matter with the fool? Just now you were all gratitude and duty.
Well, pray, sir, who is the lady?
Oh, what's that to you, sir? Come, give me a promise to love and marry her directly.
But, sir, that's not very reasonable, to ask my affection for a lady I know nothing of.
I'm sure, sir, it is most unreasonable in you to object to a lady you know nothing of. How do you know what you're objecting to? Well?
You must excuse me, sir, if I tell you, once for all, that in this point I cannot obey you.
Hark ye, Jack, I've heard you for some time with patience. I've been cool, quite cool. But take care. You know I am compliance itself when I'm not thwarted. No one more easily led when I have my own way. But don't put me in a frenzy.
Sir, I must repeat it. In this I cannot obey you.
Now, hang me if I ever call you Jack again as long as I live.
Nay, sir, but hear me.
No, none of your passion, sir. None of your violence, if you please. It won't do with me, I promise you.
Nay, sir, upon my word.
So, you will fly out, will you? Can't you be cool like me? What could compassion do? Passion is of no service. You impudent, insolent, overbearing reprobate. There. Look, you sneer at me again. Oh, don't provoke me. I'll disown you. I'll disinherit you. I'll unget you. And hang me if I ever call you Jack again. Good day to you, sirrah.
Mild, gentle, considerate father, I kiss your hands.
Meanwhile, Fag, good man that he is, learns from Lucy, the maid, that it is in reality Lydia herself that Sir Anthony wants his son, Jack Absolute, to marry. Lydia, who thinks Captain Absolute a penniless ensign called Beverly. So the captain hastens to his father's lodgings.
'Tis just as Fag told me, indeed. My father wants to force me to marry the very girl I'm plotting to run away with. He must not know of my connection with her yet a while. He has too summary a method of proceeding in these matters. Ah, here he comes. He looks plaguey gruff. Now for a penitential face.
fellow. Get out of my way.
Sir, you see a penitent son before you.
I see an impudent scoundrel before me.
A sincere penitent. I am come, sir, to acknowledge my error and to submit entirely to your will.
What's that?
I have been revolving and reflecting and considering on your past goodness and kindness.
Well, sir?
I have been likewise weighing and balancing what you were pleased to mention concerning duty and obedience and authority.
Ah, now you talk sense, absolute sense. I never heard anything more sensible in my life. Confound you, you shall be Jack again.
I am happy in the appellation.
Well, then, Jack, my dear boy, I'll now inform you who the lady really is. Now, prepare, Jack. Prepare for wonder and rapture. Prepare. Now, what think you of Miss Lydia Languish?
Languish? What, the Languishes of Worcestershire?
Worcestershire? No. Did you never meet Mrs. Malaprop and her niece, Miss Languish, who came into the country just before you were last ordered to your regiment?
Malaprop? Languish? The name seems somehow faintly familiar, but...
Jack, now, what think you of blooming, love-breathing 17?
As to that, sir, I'm quite indifferent. If I can please you in the matter, tis all I desire.
Nay, Jack, but such eyes, so innocently wild, so bashfully irresolute, not a glance but speaks and kindles some thought of love. Then, Jack, her cheeks, so deeply blushing at the insinuations of her telltale eyes. Then, Jack, her lips. Oh, Jack, lips if not swiling, more sweet hip pouting. Then, Jack, her neck. Oh, Jack, Jack.
And which is to be mine, sir, the niece or the aunt?
Why, you unfeeling, insensible puppy, I despise you. When I was your age, such a description would have made me fly off like a rocket. The aunt, indeed. Odds life, when I ran away with your mother, I wouldn't have looked at anything old or ugly to gain an empire.
Not to please your father, sir?
To please my father, zounds, not to please the... Oh, my father. Yes, of course, me father, indeed, had desired it. That's quite another matter. Though he wasn't the indulgent father that I am, Jack.
I dare say not, sir.
But, Jack, you're not sorry to find your mistress is so beautiful?
Sir, I repeat it. If I please you in this affair, 'tis all I desire.
And what a phlegmatic dog it is. Why, sir, you're an anchorite. You a soldier? Why, you're a walking block fit only to dust the company's regimentals on. Odds life, I have a great mind to marry the gal myself.
I'm entirely at your disposal, sir. If you should think of addressing Miss Lydia, Miss Languish yourself, I suppose you would have me marry the aunt.
On my word, Jack, thou art either a very great hypocrite or a... Come, I know your indifference on such a subject must be all a lie. I'm sure it must. Now, come, confess, Jack, you have been lying, haven't you?
I'm sorry, sir, that the respect and duty which I bear to you should be so mistaken.
Hang your respect and duty. Now, come along with me. I'll write a note to Mrs. Malaprop and... You shall take it to the lady directly. I'll never forgive you if you don't come back stark mad with rapture and impatience. If you don't, egad, I'll marry the girl myself. Now, off you go to Mrs. Malaprop.
Your being Sir Anthony's son, Captain, would itself be supererogatory accommodation. But from the ingenuity of your appearance, I am convinced you deserve the derivative character given of you in his letter.
Permit me to say, madam, that as I have never yet had the pleasure of seeing Miss Languish, my principal inducement in this affair at present is the honor of being allied to Mrs. Malaprop, of whose intellectual accomplishments, elegant manners, and unaffected learning, no tongue is silent.
Sir, you do me infinite honor. I beg, Captain, you'll be seated. Ah, few gentlemen nowadays know how to value the ineffectual qualities in the woman. Men have no sense now but for the worthless flower of beauty.
Oh, it is but too true indeed, ma'am. Yet I fear our ladies should share the blame. They think of our admiration of beauty so great that knowledge in them would be superfluous. Few, like Mrs. Malaprop and the orange tree, are rich in both at once.
Oh, sir, you overpower me with good breeding. is the very pineapple of politeness. You are not ignorant, Captain, that this giddy girl has somehow contrived to fix her affections on a beggarly, strolling, eavesdropping ensign whom none of us have seen, and nobody knows anything of.
Oh, I've heard of the silly affair before. I'm not at all prejudiced against her on that account.
I thought she had persisted from corresponding with him. But behold, this very day, I have interceded another letter from the fellow. I believe I have it in my pocket.
Oh, the devil, my last note.
Yes, here it is.
Oh, my note indeed, and I paid that little traitress Lucy to take it direct to her mistress.
There. Perhaps you may know the writing?
I think I've seen the hand before. Yes, I must have seen this hand before.
Read it, Captain.
My soul's idol, my adored Lydia. Very tender indeed.
Tender, aye, and profane too, O my conscience.
I am excessively alarmed at the intelligence you send me, the more so as my new rival...
That's you, sir.
...has universally the character of being an accomplished gentleman and a man of honor. Well, that's handsome enough.
Yes, go on, sir, go on. You'll see presently.
As for the old weather-beaten she-dragon who guards you, who can he mean by that?
Me, sir, me. He means me there. What do you think now? But go on a little further.
Impudent scoundrel. It shall go hard, but I will elude her vigilance.
Yes.
As I am told that the same ridiculous vanity which makes her dress up her coarse features and deck her dull chat with hard words which she don't understand.
There, sir. An attack upon my language. What do you think of that? An aspersion upon the parts of speech. Sure, if I reprehend anything in this world, it is the use of my oracular tongue and a nice derangement of epitaphs.
But now I have a scheme to see you shortly, with the old Harridan's consent, and even to make her a go-between in our interviews. Whatever such assurance.
Did you ever hear anything like it? He'll elude my vigilance, will he? Yes, he's very likely to enter these doors.
But pray, Mrs. Malaprop, could I not see the lady for a few moments now? I should like to try her temper a little.
I don't know. I doubt she is not prepared for a visit of this kind. There is a decorum in these matters.
Oh, Lord, she won't mind me. Just tell her that Beverly...
Sir?
Is... Gently, good tongue.
What did you say of Beverly?
I was going to propose that you should tell her, by way of jest, that it was Beverly who was below. She'd come down fast enough then.
Truly. It would be a trick she well deserves. Come down, I say, Lydia. Little hussy won't hear. Well, I'll go and tell her at once who it is. She shall know that Captain Absolute is come to wait on her. And I shall make her behave as becomes a young woman.
As you please, ma'am.
For the present, Captain, your servant. You've not done laughing yet, I see. Elude my vigilance. I would like to see him.
One would think now that I might throw off all disguise at once and seize my prize with security. But such is Lydia's caprice that to deceive were probably to lose her. Ah, here she comes. I'll turn my back and see whether she knows me.
What a scene am I now to go through? Surely nothing can be more dreadful than to be obliged to listen to the loathsome addresses of a stranger to one's heart. There stands the hated rival, an officer too. But, oh, how unlike my Beverly. I wonder he don't begin. Truly, he seems a very negligent wooer. Quite a disease, upon my word. I'll speak first. Mr. Absolute?
Ma'am.
Oh, heavens, Beverly.
Hush, hush, my life. Softly, and not surprised.
I'm so astonished and so terrified and so overjoyed. For heaven's sake, how came you here?
Briefly, I have deceived your aunt. I was informed that my new rival was to visit her this evening, and contriving to have him kept away, have passed myself on her for Captain Absolute.
Oh, charming. She really takes you for young Absolute?
Oh, she's convinced of it.
I can't forbear laughing to think how her sagacity is overreached.
But we trifle with our precious moments. Such another opportunity may not occur. Then let me ask my kind, my condescending angel, to fix the time when I may rescue her from undeserved persecution by marriage.
Will you then, Beverly, consent to forfeit that portion of my paltry wealth, that burden on the wings of love?
Oh, come to me rich only thus, in loveliness. Bring no portion to me but thy love. Well, you know, Lydia, it's the only dowry our poor Beverly can repay.
It is Beverly, and Beverly for himself alone, that shall ever claim me.
Psst. Mrs. Mallet.
Absolute, I know not how to apologize for her shocking rudeness. Oh, there's nothing to be hoped for from her. She's as headstrong as an allegory on the banks of the Nile.
Nay, madam, what do you charge me with now?
You unblushing rebel, didn't you tell this gentleman to his face that you loved another better? Didn't you say you never would be his?
No, madam, I did not.
Lydia, didn't you boast that Beverly possessed your heart? Tell me that, I say.
'Tis true, ma'am, and none but Beverly...
Be quiet. Assurance. You shall not be so rude.
Nay, pray, Mrs. Malaprop. Don't stop the young lady's speech. She's very welcome to talk thus. It does not hurt me in the least, I assure you.
Captain, you are too good. Come with me, miss. Let us see you again soon, Captain. And remember what we have fixed.
I shall, ma'am.
Come, take graceful leave of the gentleman.
May every blessing wait on my Beverly. My love, Beverly.
Hussy, I'll choke the words in your throat. Come along.
Meanwhile, Bob Akers has learned that Mrs. Malaprop does not favor his suit for Lydia's hand. He suspects the fictional Beverly, not knowing that Beverly is Captain Absolute. At this moment, we are in Akers' lodgings, where he is asking help of his friend, the fiery Sir Lucius O'Trigger.
My dear Sir Lucius, I kiss your hand.
Pray me, little friend. What has brought you so suddenly to Bath?
Faith, I followed Cupid's jack-o'-lantern and find myself in a quagmire. I've been very ill-used, Sir Lucius. I don't choose to mention names, but look on me as a very ill-used gentleman.
Pray, what is the case? I ask no names.
Well, mark me, Sir Lucius. I fall as deep as need be in love with a young lady. Her friends take my part. I follow her to Bath, send word of my arrival, and receive answer that the lady is to be otherwise disposed of.
Very ill upon me conscience. Pray, can you divine the cause of it?
Why, there's the matter. She has another lover.
What?
One Beverly, who she tells me is now in Bath. Odd slanders and lies. He must be at the bottom of it.
A rival in the case, is there? And you think he supplanted you unfairly?
Unfairly, to be sure he has. He never could have done it fairly.
Then sure you know what is to be done.
Not I, upon my soul.
We wear no swords here, but you understand me.
What? Fight him?
Aye, to be sure. What can I mean else?
But he's given me no provocation.
Can a man commit a more heinous offense against another than to fall in love with the same woman? Oh, baby soul, it's the most unpardonable breach of friendship.
Breach of friendship? But I've no acquaintance with this man. I never saw him in my life.
That's no argument at all. He's the less right, then, to take such a liberty.
Gad, that's true. Ooh, I grow full of anger, Sir Lucius. Odds, flints, pairs, and triggers. I'll challenge him.
Come now. There must be no passion at all in the case. These things should be done civilly.
Oh, I must be in a passion, Sir Lucius. I must be in a rage.
No.
Dear Sir Lucius, let me be in a rage. Come, here's pen and paper. Ooh, I would the ink were red. Indict, I say, indict. Shall I begin with an oath? Oh, do, Sir Lucius, let me begin with an oath.
No, do the thing decently like a Christian. Begin now, sir.
Sir, that's too civil by half.
To prevent the confusion that might arise from our both addressing the same lady.
Ah, there's the reason, the same lady.
I shall expect the honor of your company.
Honor? Of your company.
To settle our pretensions.
To settle our pretensions.
Let me see now. Kingsmead's Fields will do. In Kingsmead's Fields.
In Kingsmead's Fields. So, it's done. Well, I'll send it.
Well, now.
Presently.
I'll leave you to fix your own time. Well, for the present, remember now, when you meet your antagonist, be sure you run him through and through. But do everything in a mild and agreeable manner.
A little later, Akers discusses the coming duel with his faithful manservant, David. But David is not at all sure that his master's been wise, and he hints as much.
Odd blades, David. No gentleman will ever risk the loss of his honor.
I say, then, 'twould be but civil in honor never to risk the loss of a gentleman. Look ye, master,
This honor seems to me to be a marvelous false friend. Put the case I was a gentleman, which, thank heaven, no one can say of me. Well, my honor makes me quarrel with another gentleman of my acquaintance. So, we fight. Pleasant enough that... Bah! I kill him. The more's my luck. Now, pray, who gets the profit of it? Why, my honor. But put the case that he kills me. I go to the worms, and my honor whips over to my enemy.
No, David, in that case, your honor follows you to the grave.
No, that's just the place where I could make a shift to do without it.
Oh, David, you're a coward. Oh, but you don't think there is such very, very great danger, huh? Oh, odd's life. Zounds, I won't be afraid. Odds, fire, and fury, you shan't make me afraid. Here's the challenge, and I have sent for my dear friend Jack Absolute to carry it for me.
For my part, I wouldn't lend a hand to it.
Oh, out, you poltroon. You haven't the valor of a grasshopper.
Well, I say no more. It will be sad news, but I have done.
It won't do, David. I'm determined to fight. So get along with you, coward, while I'm in the mind.
Here comes Sir Captain Absolute, sir.
Oh, I'm expecting him.
Well, heaven send we all be alive this time tomorrow. Goodbye, master.
Oh, get along, you cowardly, ghastly, croaking raven.
Well, what's the matter, Bob?
A vile, sheep-hearted blockhead. If I hadn't the valor of St. George and the dragon to boot...
Well, what did you want with me, Bob?
Here. I'm writing a challenge.
To Anson Beverly. Say, what's going on now?
Well, what is it?
A challenge.
Indeed. Why, you won't fight him, will you, Bob?
Egad, but I will, Jack. Sir Lucius has wrought me to it. He's left me full of rage, and I'll fight this evening. So much good passion mustn't be wasted.
But what have I to do with this?
Why, as I think you know something of this fellow, I want you to find him out for me and give him this mortal defiance.
Well, give it to me, and trust me, he gets it.
Oh, thank you, my dear friend, my dear Jack.
Sir Anthony Absolute is below, inquiring for the captain.
Oh, I'll come instantly. Well, my little hero, success attend you.
Stay, Jack. If Beverly should ask you what kind of a man your friend Akers is, do tell him I'm a devil of a fellow, will you, Jack?
Oh, to be sure I shall. I'll say that you're called, in the country, Fighting Bob.
All right, for I don't want to take his life if I clear my honor.
No, that's very kind of you.
Why, you don't wish me to kill him, do you, Jack?
No, upon my soul, I do not. But a devil of a fellow, eh?
Say, Jack, you may add that you never saw me in such a rage before. A most devouring rage.
I will.
Remember, Jack, a determined dog.
Aye, Fighting Bob.
When Sir Anthony was announced, Captain Absolute did not realize that his father had come to take him on a formal call to Mrs. Malaprop. For in his father's presence, he knew he couldn't pretend to Lydia that he was Ensign Beverly. Before the gentlemen arrive, we find Mrs. Malaprop admonishing Lydia.
No caparisons, miss, if you please. Caparisons do not become a young woman. No. Captain Absolute is indeed a fine gentleman.
Aye. They are Captain Absolute you have seen.
Then he's so well-bred, so full of alacrity and adulation, and has so much to say for himself, and in such good language, too. His physiognomy so grammatical. Then his presence so noble. I protest. When I saw him, I thought of what Hamlet says in the play. Hesperian curves the front of Job himself. An eye like March to threaten at command. A station like Harry Mercury knew something about kissing on a hill. However, the similitude struck me directly.
How enraged she'll be presently when she discovers her mistake.
The gentlemen have arrived, ma'am.
And here we are, Mrs. Malaprop. Difficulty enough I had to bring this fellow. I don't know what's the matter, but if I hadn't have held him by force, he'd have given me the slip.
You've had infinite trouble, Sir Anthony, in the affair. Lydia, rise, I beseech you. Pay your respects.
I hope, madam, that Miss Languish has reflected on the worth of this gentleman and the regard to her aunt's choice and my alliance. Now, Jack, speak to her.
Oh, what the devil shall I do? You see, sir, she won't even look at me whilst you are here. Let me entreat you, sir, to leave us together.
I say, sir, I won't stir a foot yet.
I am sorry to say, Sir Anthony, that my affluence over my niece is very small. Will you turn around, Lydia? I blush. Are you?
May I not flatter myself that Miss Languish will assign what cause of dislike she can have to my son? Why don't you begin, Jack?
It is impossible, Sir Anthony, she can have any. She will not say she has. You answer, hussy.
Then, madam, I trust that a childish and hasty predilection will be no bar to Jack's happiness. Down, Sarah, why don't you speak?
Faith, sir, I am so confounded and so confused. I told you I should be so, sir. I knew it. The tremor of my passion entirely takes away my presence of mind.
They don't take away your voice, you fool, does it? Go up and speak to her directly. Unlock your jaw, Sarah, or...
Now, heaven send she may be too sullen to look around. I must disguise my voice. Will not Miss Languish lend an ear to the mild accents of true love?
What the devil ails the fellow? Why don't you speak out, not stand croaking like a frog in a quinsy?
The excess of my awe and my modesty quite choke me.
Ah, your modesty again. I tell you what, Jack, if you don't speak out directly and glibly too, I shall be in such a rage. Mrs. Malaprop, I wish the lady would favor us with something more than a side front.
So, all will out, I see. Be not surprised, my Lydia. Suppress all surprise at present.
Heavens, 'tis Beverly's voice. Is this possible? My Beverly, can this be? My Beverly.
Oh, 'tis all over.
Beverly, the devil with Beverly. What can the girl mean? This is my son, Jack Absolute.
For shame, hussy, for shame. Your head runs so on that fellow that you have him always in your eyes. Beg Captain Absolute's pardon directly.
I see no Captain Absolute, but my love, Beverly.
Sounds the girl's mad.
On my conscience, I believe she is. What do you mean by Beverly, hussy? You saw Captain Absolute before today? There he is. Your husband, the Chelby.
With all my soul, ma'am.
Oh, she's as mad as Bedlam, or has this fellow been playing up a rogue's trick? Come here, Sarah. Who are you?
Faith, sir, I'm not quite clear myself, but I'll endeavor to recollect.
Are you my son or not? Now answer for your mother, you dog, if you won't for me.
Sir Anthony, most assuredly I am your wife's son. And that I sincerely believe myself to be yours also, I hope my duty has always shown. Mrs. Malaprop, I am your most respectful admirer and should be proud to add affectionate nephew. I need not tell my Lydia that she sees her faithful Beverly, who, knowing the singular generosity of her temper, assumed that name and the station which has proved the test of the most disinterested love, which he now hopes to enjoy in a more elevated character.
So, there will be no elopement after all.
On my soul, Jack, thou art a very impudent fellow. But to do you justice, I think I never saw a piece of more consummate assurance.
Oh, you flatter me, sir. You compliment. It is my modesty, you know, sir. My modesty that has stood in my way.
Well, I'm glad you're not the dull, insensible varlet you pretend to be. However, I'm glad you made a fool of your father, you dog. I am. So, this was your patience, duty, and obedience. I thought it was sudden. Oh, you never heard their names before. Not you. What? The Languishes of Worcestershire, hey? If you could please me in the affair, 'twas all that you desired. Ah, you dissembling villain. Why, you hypocritical young rascal, I wonder you aren't ashamed to hold up your head.
Oh, 'tis with difficulty, sir. I am confused, very much confused, as you must perceive.
Oh, Lord. Wait. Sir Anthony. A new light breaks in upon me. Hey, Captain, did you write the letters then? Am I to thank you for the elegant compilation of an old weather-beaten she-dragon? Mercy, was it you that reflected on the parts of speech?
Yes, sir. If you don't assist me, I shall certainly not be able to stand it.
Oh, come, come, Mrs. Malaprop. We must forget and forgive. Odd's life. Matters have taken so clever a turn all of a sudden that I can find it in my heart to be good-humored and gallant. Mrs. Malaprop, we must leave them together. They long to fly into each other's arms. Mrs. Malaprop, I'm in such spirits, I don't know what I couldn't do. Dad, I'd like to have a little fooling myself.
Aye, Sir Anthony.
So grave, Lydia.
Sir?
Lydia, Now that we are as happy in our friends' consent as in our mutual vows.
Friends' consent, indeed.
Oh, come, come. We must lay aside some of our romance. A little wealth and comfort may be endured, after all. And for your fortune, the lawyers shall make such a settlement.
Lawyers? I hate lawyers.
Oh, nay, then we will not wait for their lingering forms, but instantly procure the license and...
The license? I hate licenses.
Oh, my love, be not so unkind. Thus let me entreat.
Oh, sure. What signifies kneeling when you know I must have you?
Nay, madam, there shall be no constraint upon your inclinations, I promise you. If I have lost your heart, I resign the rest. Gad, I must try what a little spirit will do.
Then, sir, let me tell you that the interest you had there was acquired by a mean, unmanly imposition and deserves punishment of fraud.
Oh, you wrong me, Lydia. You wrong me. Only here.
So while I fondly imagine we were deceiving my relations, I am myself the only dupe at last. But here, sir, here is the picture, Beverly's picture. There, sir, and be assured I throw the original from my heart as easily.
Nay, nay, madam. We will not differ as to that. Here. Here is Miss Lydia Languish. What a difference. Aye, there is the heavenly assenting smile that first gave soul and spirit to my hopes. Those are the lips which sealed a vow as yet scarce dry in Cupid's calendar. I cannot find it in my heart to part with it.
It is your own doing, sir. I suppose you are perfectly satisfied.
Oh, most certainly. What signifies breaking some scores of solemn promises? All that's of no consequence, you know. To be sure, people will say that Miss didn't know her own mind. Or perhaps they may be ill-natured enough to hint that the gentleman grew tired of his lady and forsook her.
There's no bearing his insolence.
Kindly, you must interrupt your billing and cooing a while.
Oh, this is worse than your treachery and deceit, you base ingrate.
What the devil's the matter now? Zounds, Mrs. Malaprop, this is the oddest billing and cooing I ever heard.
Ask the lady, sir.
For mercy, Lydia, what is the reason of this?
Ask the gentleman, ma'am.
Zounds, I shall be in a frenzy. Why, Jack, you're not come out to be someone else, are you? I see it. You've been too lively, Jack.
Oh, not Sir Anthony.
Oh, by all that's good, sir.
Zounds, say no more, I tell you. Mrs. Malaprop shall make your peace. Mrs. Malaprop, you must tell her. Tell her 'tis Jack's way. Tell her 'tis all our ways. It runs in the blood of our family. Come away, Jack. Come on. Mrs. Malaprop, a young villain, eh?
Sir Anthony.
Captain Absolute's troubles are by no means over. Through a complete misunderstanding, he's also been challenged to a duel at Kingsmead Fields by Sir Lucius O'Trigger, at the same place and the same time as the duel with Bob Acres. And now we are at Kingsmead Fields, where Sir Lucius is preparing Bob Acres for his duel with the mythical Ensign Beverly. Acres speaks.
Zounds, we might as well fight in a sentry box. I tell you, Sir Lucius, the farther he is off, the cooler I shall take my aim.
Faith, then, I suppose you'd aim in the best of all if he's out of sight?
No, Sir Lucius, but I should think 40 or 8 and 30 yards.
Ah, nonsense. 3 or 4 feet between the mouths of your pistols is as good as a mile.
Odds, bullets, no, by my valor. There's no merit in killing him so near.
Well, the gentleman's friend and I must settle that. But tell me now, Mr. Akers, in case of an accident, is there any little will or commission I could execute for you?
Oh, I'm much obliged to you, Sir Lucius, but I don't understand.
Well, you may think there's no being shot at without a little risk. And if an unlucky bullet should carry a quietus with it...
A quietus?
If that should be the case now, would you choose to be pickled and sent home?
Pickled?
Or to lie here in the Abbey? I'm told there's very snug lying in the Abbey.
Snug lying in the Abbey? Odds, tremors, Sir Lucius, don't talk so.
I suppose, Mr. Akers, you've never been engaged in an affair of this kind before.
Oh, no, Sir Lucius, never before.
Ah, now that's a pity. There's nothing like being used to a thing. Well, now place yourself so. Head up, that's it. Now let me see the broad side of your full front. There, now there. Now a ball or two may pass clean through your body and never do you any harm at all.
A ball or two? Clean through me?
Aye, and it's much the genteelest attitude into the bargain.
Oh, look, you, Sir Lucius, I'd just as lief be shot in an awkward posture as a genteel one. So by my valor, I will stand edgeways.
Well, I hope they don't mean to disappoint us. No. No, Faith, I think you see them coming.
Oh, what?
Coming?
Aye, who are those two getting over the stile over there?
Oh, there are two of them indeed. Well, let them come. Sir Lucius, we won't run.
Run?
No, say, we won't run by our valor.
What's the devil's the matter with your man?
Nothing. Nothing, my dear Sir Lucius, but I don't feel quite so bold somehow as I did.
Fie, consider your honor. Well, here they are. Here they come.
Oh, but I was safe at Claude Hall or could be shot at before I was aware.
Gentlemen,
you're most obedient. To do a kind office first for your friend, then to proceed to business on your own account.
What, Jack Absolute? Oh, my dear Jack, my dear friend.
Harky, Bob, Beverly's at hand. Well, Mr. Akers, I don't blame you saluting me, gentlemen, civilly. So, Mr. Beverly, if you'll choose your weapons, the captain and I will measure the ground.
My weapons, sir? Why, I'm Squire Falkland.
Odd's life, Sir Lucius. I'm not going to fight Mr. Falkland. These are my particular friends.
What, sir? Didn't you come here to fight Mr. Akers?
Not I, upon my word, sir.
Well, no, that's mighty provoking. But I hope, Mr. Falkland, as the three of us come on purpose for the game, you won't be so cantankerous as to spoil the party by sitting out.
Oh, pray, Falkland, fight to oblige Sir Lucius.
Nay, Jack, if Mr. Akers is so bent upon the matter.
Look here, Sir Lucius, there's no occasion at all for me to fight. And if it's the same to you, I'd as leave let it alone.
Observe me now, Mr. Akers. I mustn't be trifled with. You've certainly challenged somebody, and you came here to fight him. Now, if that gentleman there is willing to represent him, I can't see for me soul why it isn't just the same thing.
Why, no, Sir Lucius. I tell you, it is one Beverly I've challenged. A fellow, you see, that dare not show his face.
Hold, Bob. Let me set you right. There is no such man as Beverly in the case. The person who assumed that name is myself. And as his pretensions are the same in both characters, he is ready to support them in whatever way you please.
Well, no, this is lucky. Now you have an opportunity.
What? Quarrel with my dear friend Jack Absolute? Not if he were 50 Beverleys. Sound, Sir Lucius, you would not have me so unnatural.
Upon me conscience, Mr. Akers, your valor has oozed away with a vengeance. But I am to fight Captain Absolute, and you shall be my second.
Oh, backs and abettors, I'll be your second with all my heart. And if you should get a quietus, you may command me entirely. I'll get you snug lying in the abbey here, or pickle you, or anything of the kind, with the greatest pleasure.
Ah, you're little better than a coward.
Mind, gentlemen, he calls me a coward. Coward was the word, by my valor.
Well, sir?
Looky, Sir Lucius, tisn't that I mind the word coward. Coward may be said in a joke. But if you had called me a poltroon, odds, daggers and balls.
Well, sir?
I should have thought you were a very ill-bred man.
You're beneath me notice.
Oh, nay, Sir Lucius, you can't have a better second than my friend Akers. He's a most determined dog, called in the country Fighting Bob. He generally kills a man a week, don't you, Bob?
Aye, at home.
Well, then, Captain, 'tis we must begin. So come out, me little counselor, and ask the gentleman whether he'll resign the lady without forcing you to proceed against him.
Come on then, sir.
Come.
Since you won't let it be an amicable suit, here's my reply.
Come on now. Come on.
Oh, Jack, here comes your father with Mrs. Malaprop and Lydia.
Put up, Jack, put up, or I shall be in a frenzy. Now tell me, sir, how came you in a duel?
Faith, sir, that gentleman can tell you better than I. 'Twas he called on me.
Gad, sir. How came you to call my son out without explaining your reasons?
Your son, sir, insulted me in a manner which me honor couldn't brook.
Zounds, Jack, how dast you insult my gentleman in a manner which his honor couldn't brook.
Come, let's have no honor before ladies. Captain Absolute, come here. How can you intimidate us so? Here's Lydia has been terrified to death for you.
For fear I should be killed or escape, ma'am.
Nay, no delusions to the past. Lydia is convinced. Speak, child.
It is true. I offer this gentleman my hand and solicit the return of his affections.
Oh, my little angel, say you so? Sir Lucius, I perceive there must be some mistake here. With regard to the affront which you affirm I have given you, I can only say that it could not have been intentional. And as you must be convinced that I should not fear to support a real injury, you shall now see that I am not ashamed to atone for an inadvertency. I ask your pardon. But for this lady, while honored with her approbation, I will support any claim against any man whatever.
Well said, Jack, and I'll stand by you, my boy.
Mind, I give up all my claim. I make no pretensions to anything in the world. And if I can't get a wife without fighting for her, by my valor, I'll live a bachelor.
Captain, give me your hand. An affront handsomely acknowledged becomes an obligation. So, Jack, I wish you joy. Ladies, come now. To show you I'm neither vexed nor angry, odds, tables and pipes, I'll order the fiddles in half an hour in the new rooms, and I insist you all meet me there.
Gad, sir, I like your spirit. And tonight we single lads will drink a health to the young people and a good husband to Mrs. Malaprop.
Past hour, you have heard The Rivals by Richard Brinsley Sheridan, adapted for radio by Welburn Kelly. Included in today's cast were Florence Reed as Mrs. Malaprop, Ralph Forbes as Captain Absolute, Louis Hector as Sir Anthony Absolute, Linda Watkins as Lydia Languish, Reese Williams as David, Zita Johann as Julia Melville, Sally O'Neill as Lucy, Whitford Kane as Sir Lucius O'Trigger, Bertram Tanswell as Bob Akers, J.P. Wilson as Fagg. Our narrator was Eric Dressler. Great Plays Drama Guide by Blevins Davis, who arranged for the series, is available to our radio audience at the cost of 25 cents. Send coin or money orders to Great Plays, National Broadcasting Company, New York City. The Great Plays Drama Guide contains a summary of the plot, sketch of the author's life, and pertinent facts about each of the 30 plays of this series. Consult your local library for reading material on the remaining Great Plays of the series. Next Sunday at this time, we will present Gerald Holland's original one-hour treatment of early American drama. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York. Mm-hmm.